The Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by AIB. We see Brave and we're backing it through Brexit.
Well, of course, restaurants were at the front and centre of the news this week, given the further restrictions. We're joined now by celebrity chef Paul Treveau to look at the impact on his business. He's well known for his shows on Amazon Prime, Virgin Media and his book on the trade, a book he says that makes Kitchen Confidential look like Bambi. Well, we'll get to your story a little later. But first, Paul, you've had to change your business model. How have you changed it?
So we basically closed our doors. And I grabbed my team together and I said, look, guys, I don't think there's going to be a restaurant open in the country this side of Christmas. So here's my plan. We're going to turn it into a pop-up deli, literally within 2 days. That way we can serve and trade as we're an essential business. And then I turned around and I said, look, let's go one step further here, because knowing all the local producers in the area struggling as much as we were, I said, but sure, I've got plenty of space here in the restaurant. Why don't I open the doors to all the local producers? So we now have a family that's growing every day, but at the moment we have 11 different local producers, from jam, chutneys, salad dressings, chocolate, art, candles, you name it. If we can put it on a shelf, we'd only be too delighted to display it. And we're just helping as many people as we possibly can to get through the next few months.
Can you make money, Paul, doing what you're doing now?
The answer is no. But what I'm doing is I'm staying in business. Keep the door open is the new making money.
What are you hearing from other businesses? What are they doing? And how tough is it, really?
I'll be honest with you, Richard. I have never heard so many people in this industry just with so much despair at the moment. People that I would have looked at over the last 5, 10, 15 years. We're in business 20 years now. And I've never seen so many people lost. I think that's the best way to describe it. They're absolutely lost, because the first lockdown literally was the sucker punch to the gut. And you can kind of get up in a boxing ring after that. You can kind of take one big belt to the gut or to the head. And then we had maybe 6 weeks, possibly maybe 10 weeks of a decent trade. And then all of a sudden we're back to square one again. So it was like getting knocked out in the first round. You get up. It's very hard to get up again if you're knocked out again in the second round. So people that I would have known that would never give out, never complain, never moan, are now just, I think that's it. I think we're gone. I don't think there's any light at the end of this tunnel.
See, on the one hand, I suppose it's good for restaurants to try and, as you say, to try and pivot and do something a little bit different and just stay in business. But I presume they have overheads, they have rent, and even doing something differently, it just might not financially stack up for them.
Very simply, you're 100% correct. Who I would feel sorry for most is anybody who's renting a premises, because at least if you've been paying off the bank and in a mortgage, at least there's some bit of a light at the end of the tunnel. We might go through hell for the next 3 months, but at least I know there's 10 more bricks that are mine and not the bank's. So at least there's something. But anybody who's renting at the moment, it's just like you still have to pay that rent. And I know there's a huge argument out there. Oh, landlords need to cop on and landlords need to stop charging. But it's just not that simple. There's a lot of landlords, obviously, who they have to pay their rent to the banks. So it's not as simple as just, you know, giving another moratorium, because the banks won't give that to the landlords.
Well, this is probably the toughest time that many people in the restaurant or industry are going to have to face. But going back to you, was it always on the cards for you that you would become a chef, that you would run your own restaurant, or what did you want to do when you were younger?
It's in my blood. My dad was the executive head chef in Drury's Balls Bridge for about 20 odd years, when it was Drury's, which was one of the top 5-star hotels in the country. So I grew up as a kid sitting on a stool watching my dad when he was at home in the kitchens, or even if I was lucky enough, I'd go into his office inside in the kitchens in Drury's, and I just watched him cook. And I watched him, you know, butchering. Back then, it wasn't ordering in 20 steaks, you ordered in 30 cows, and the butchering was done inside in the kitchen. It was phenomenal to see. You didn't buy in fillets of fish, you bought in bags of fish, and it was all filleted and gutted and everything inside. It was a different world back then. And so when I saw this, I just went, this is me, because the buzz inside in the kitchen, particularly during services, like there's no drug in the world out there like it. It's just a pure adrenaline rush. And I said, this is what I want to do.
And when your dad was doing all that cooking and you were watching him, whether it was maybe in juries or at home, was he good at explaining to you, this is what I'm doing? Or was it more of a just sit back and watch?
They always say the best way to learn is that if you're in a room and somebody is smarter than you, shut up and listen. So if you can sit and watch and don't ask them about what are we watching on the telly tomorrow or what are we going to do next week, Dad, if you just sit and watch, you'll be amazed at how much you learn. So as a kid, and Dad was very, I wouldn't say, well, his dad is Swiss, so he came from a military background in Switzerland. So it was very, very strict. So you didn't dare ask too many questions because he'd tell you to shut up, pay attention. So that's pretty much what we did. And that's where I learned everything. In the kitchen was literally everything was from Dad.
Given his role in juries and it's the part that it played in the restaurant and hotel scene at that time, he must have served a few famous people, did he?
Dad cooked, I'll just try some names. You might have heard of one or two of these. Elvis Presley. There was a famous sports guy by the name of Muhammad Ali. You might have heard of him. Princess Grace. Some singer by the name of Frank Sinatra. To name but a few. Dad would tell me a lot of the stories. I mean, he served Elvis when he was on the trains in the military going through Switzerland and Austria. And Dad just happened to be working in the kitchens on the trains. Because being Swiss, you have to do military service. So he cooked a fantastic guinea fowl with a wild forest mushroom sauce for Elvis on the trains. But I think his favorite story was Muhammad Ali. So Muhammad Ali in 1972, you might have heard of the story, fought Al Blue Lewis here in Ireland in Croke Park. And he stayed in the Dublin Sports Hotel or Kiltiernan Hotel. And it was a friend of Dad's who actually owned that at the time, the Opperman family. And they asked Dad, would he go up and take care of Muhammad Ali? So he went in and he was there for, I think, 2 or 3 days. And Dad will tell me that it was the easiest time he ever had to cook for anybody because all Muhammad Ali ate was a 20-ounce T-bone steak, rare, for breakfast, lunch and dinner. No spuds, no carbs, nothing. And he had these 6-pound lead boots. And if anybody will remember Dublin Sports Hotel, there used to be an artificial ski slope at the back of it there. And Muhammad Ali's cardio training was running up and down the ski slope with those 6-pound lead boots after eating his 20-ounce T-bone steak rare.
Running the steak off himself up the side of the hill. And is your dad, was he a tough taskmaster? Because you didn't necessarily, you were told, don't go into the business. You decided you would. Was he a person who's difficult to cook for?
No, I mean, in fairness, like Dad, this is where he always taught me the greatest thing you must remember is always tell the truth. That way you never need to remember what you said. So Dad is always very honest and he'd turn around. He'd have no problems telling me, I think you've a bit more salt on that or you have too much salt in that. But watching Dad when he was in the kitchens in juries, I mean, some people would say the rest of the crew were scared stiff of him, but I would have said it was total respect because he just had this way about him. And again, it's going back, like you're talking 30, 40 years ago now, nearly at this stage, you're just talking, like it was a different world back then and nobody dared question him. They didn't have to because he knew what he was doing. Like juries, they were feeding up to nearly 4,000 or 5,000 people a day in the height of it. And so you're talking a massive machine and Dad ran the whole show.
So how did you end up in Kerry then, Paul, and running the restaurant there?
Well, it's funny, after about 15, 17 years in hotels, that's when I decided that, yeah, it was time to do this for myself. And back when I finished my first year in college, I remember Dad coming into me on a Friday and he goes, let's just say we had done our exams on the Thursday. So Friday morning, I was a little bit ropey, to say the least. And Dad says to me, what's the plan for the summer? And I went, let me get over the weekend first. And he goes, well, whatever you're doing, he says, have it ready by Monday. He says, because you're going to Kenmare. Not asking me. He was telling me I'm going to Kenmare. Now, a young whippersnapper up in Dublin at 18 years of age, I just said to him, Kenware? I hadn't a clue. If it was outside of Dublin, I didn't know if it existed. So I was put on a train in Houston. I got down to Killarney and I said, I'll go down, figure out where to Kenmare. It can't be that far. I went down the road and there was a signpost to the left saying Kenmare this way and a signpost to the right saying Kenmare that way. And I went, oh, jeez, I haven't a clue where I'm going. So I got in a cab, went over to Kenmare and worked in a hotel there for a summer. And I met this fine looking thing. And we kind of went out with each other, split up with each other, went out with each other. I think it was twice. She said it was 3 times. But eventually she convinced me, or maybe I convinced her, that we'll make a go of this. And she said, let's go down to Kerry. So I was originally looking for a building in Kenmare because my only condition with Elaine, my wife, was to say, look, if we make such a huge move down to Kerry, I have to buy the building. I can't rent the place because it's just, I don't see that being an option. So there was nothing in Kenmare, but eventually the restaurant came up in Killarney and there's been no looking back since. It was the best thing that ever happened.
And it's interesting, Paul, that you felt that when you were going to open a restaurant, you wanted to own the building, because not only has that come in handy now because you're doing something different because of the pandemic and presumably you don't have rents to pay on it, but it also shows that maybe as somebody, you know, you were very interested in business and the financials of making the business work. Do you think that that's maybe sometimes in short supply with chefs when they want to own their own place?
This might upset a few people, but it's a fact. There's, when you're looking at running a restaurant, probably the fifth or sixth most important thing you need to be good at is cooking. The most important thing you need to do is your maths and is your business. And I was blessed because I worked in a hotel in Dublin, and the general manager there, who I think is the best GM in the hotel industry in the country, Martin Hoolan, he took me aside after a week and he said to me, listen, do you want to work in the bar and restaurant or do you want to learn how to run a business? And I said, I want to learn how to run a business. And he goes, great, you're 3 months on reception and then you're 3 months in accounts. And he says, after that, you'll know where the money's coming in and you know where the money's going out. And that is the only thing that's important in running a business. So he drilled into me how the maths work, and it has stood its test in time to me tenfold, because it doesn't matter about ego. It doesn't matter if I'm the greatest chef in the world. It doesn't matter anything else. In business, all that matters is there more money coming in than there is that's going out.
Maybe there are some people in the industry who, they may be chefs and they want to own their own business. They're not thinking about the financials and they can just sort of maybe pay a lot of money to hire a chef or a couple of chefs and think then everything's just going to fall into place.
Yes, that unfortunately is there, and it's probably like that in every business. And the reality of it is it doesn't work, because if we've learned nothing from the previous recession back in 08, 09, we all should have learned that we need a nest egg to carry us there for at least 6 months. Now, nobody saw this pandemic lasting for as long as it is, obviously. But when I see people that are kind of saying, you know, this is ridiculous and looking to blame somebody, maybe some people, and probably in any business, but I'm only speaking on behalf of restaurants, maybe you actually need to look at your own business model. You got to start asking yourselves, well, maybe if I didn't pay that 50, 60, 70, 100 grand extra on wages, would I be in a better position if I just stayed in my kitchen cooking?
Is that a bit harsh, Paul, on some people? And I say that because if this was an ordinary recession, there might have been some scope for people to see it coming. People might have said, we're in a bit of a cycle. This is the boom. There might be a bit of a bust coming. But this came out of left field. I mean, in the sense that I don't think anybody could have imagined that something like this would take the legs from under the industry instantly.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Honesty hurts. And I don't, it's just people going through enough hell at the moment as well. But I mean, now more than ever, you really have to be honest with yourself. Nobody saw this pandemic coming, but you have to put yourself in a position for an absolute disaster. That's what business is.
When you look at the landscape that's out there now and the sort of financial carnage, I'm sure a lot of restaurants will close or have closed and aren't coming back. Do you think we're likely to see a crisis of unpaid debts and all the problems that go with that, insolvencies?
I mean, look, it's the way legislation works here. Anybody who's trading as a company can literally go bust and their suppliers suffer. So without a shadow of a doubt, there's going to be huge debt there. And how we come back from that, I don't know. I mean, you can't just say, yeah, just suck it up and move on, because there's going to be so many people that are going to be affected with this. So I feel so sorry for the amount of suppliers. And a lot of suppliers would have traded in good faith with well-known establishments and businesses that were there 15, 20 years. And they'd let them build up credit terms for 6 months nearly and say, yeah, you're grand, sure, I know you've never let me down before. And now all of a sudden these businesses are going to be gone. And so without a doubt, there's going to be a huge debt there.
It's always a difficult issue, particularly in small towns and villages in rural Ireland, isn't it? If someone's doing their best to pay off debts and maybe the money's just not there.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't walk down the side of the street and see my fishmonger across the road knowing that I owed him money. I just couldn't do it. And that's the way, like, you're talking small family-run businesses that are the heart and the heartbeat of so many towns around rural Ireland. And the pressure and the stress and everything they're going through is, it's so hard to be positive about it. But unfortunately, you just have to be, because I think the best way to do it is that if everybody has the understanding that we're going to battle our way through this and we'll sort it out next year or the year after or whatever, we'll get back onto our feet somehow. At least there's some hope, because I know there's people listening today going, I owe X amount of money to all my different suppliers and there's no way out of this. Well, if you go bust and if you lose everything, you definitely won't pay them back. But if you come back next month, 2 months, 3 months. I don't think there'll be a restaurant open in the country this side of Christmas anyway. But next year, when there's a vaccine, you have to be positive. You can't go in business without seeing some ray of light. So we literally just have to write off the last 6 months, the next 6 months, and just hope that we've learned something from it, we come back stronger, and that we can get on top of the debt eventually. That's the only way we can do it.
Well, Paul Treveau of Treveau's Restaurant in Killarney, thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you so much, Richard.